Welcome to DJ Grandpa's Crib, the podcast of Kickstarter, the crowdfunding website. Each week I interview real people with honest dreams. Today is Monday, July 8th, 2013. On this day in history, in 1776, the Liberty Bell rang to summon citizens to the very first public reading of the Declaration of Independence. I think that's cool.
Is focusing on Remote Angel Volume 1's printing to be sold at conventions. My dream is for this to be accomplished so readers everywhere could be able to read Remote Angel right within their hands.
Yeah, and we'll promote in Facebook and Twitter for you, and it looks like you're going to get the money. You just got to keep fighting.
Yeah, I'll keep trying.
Yes, keep hope alive. Keep hope alive.
I keep tweeting every hour, and my friends have been doing it, too. Oh, gosh, it's crazy.
I know. Kickstarter is a full-time job, isn't it?
Yeah, I do it for hours and hours. When I wake up and go to bed, it's just,
You live in New Jersey?
Yes, I live in New Jersey.
What would you like me to call you?
Yenny would be okay.
How long have you been an artist?
Since I was 11 years old, I got really into art.
And you are on Kickstarter to raise money for your comic, Remote Angel.
Yes.
Yenny, from New Jersey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell me about your comic, Remote Angel?
I've been working on this comic since 2008, and the story is about a girl named Alice DeSongi, and she discovers that she is an angel, and she needs to fight against these beings from hell called Deathix. So she basically has to fight against demons. And the demon behind it is the demon named Lord Xavier.
Oh, okay. And so you're deep into this Magna style, I see, and all sorts of twisty, crazy, good against evil type of stories.
Yeah.
That's not bad. And you're 24 years old. I read that on your Kickstarter page, and you're one of these type of convention goers, I see. You're in the vendor alley. I've never met a person who hangs out in the vendor alley at conventions, but they do have cool wares to sell. So you're on Kickstarter. Why again?
Because I want to fund for my comics, and I want them to be physical copies because I can only sell them online. It's on this website called lulu.com. Right. And they print out books for people who order online, but the sales happen really slow. So I'd rather sell them physically so people could actually open the book and see them. And I want to have the money in order to have for the conventions. And it's pretty expensive with the hotels and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Traveling does take a lot of resources. I understand that. Now, how did you start this whole Remote Angel thing? How did you become an artist?
Well, before Remote Angel, I had like other stories drawn, but Remote Angel came inspired to me from dreams I've had and some life experiences with people I've met. And for those who are interested in manga and the anime style, and if they like any fantasy dramatic stories, be sure to check this out. I think they'll really like it.
Now, how do you pronounce that art style again? Because I always pronounce it wrong. I say Magna, but it's not Magna.
It's manga.
See, that's the one thing about being on DJ Grandpa's Crib. Every week, I get the story wrong and people have to correct me, you know?
Yeah.
I'll try and do a better job, but, you know, this is going to have to be good enough this week.
Yeah.
Do you have any cool rewards that we should know about?
Yes. For the book, you can have an ad for your website in it. And for when I sell them, people can see your site in the book and be like, wow, I like this person. They could go to your site. So promote me, I promote you. And there's like commissions and stuff. I could do 30 or more sketch requests depending what reward you pick. And I have t-shirts, phone charms, Remote Angel exclusive prints, and I could do like a tutorial for people if they want like either a video or an imagery tutorial.
Wow, you're this massive entrepreneurial female powerhouse. That's pretty cool, man. You're impressive, man. I like that. I like that. And all coming out of your Yennefer mind.
Yeah.
Wow, man. You're pretty twisty. I like that. Well, you keep up the good work. Thank you for coming on the show. And for anyone out there who's interested in Yennefer's very vivid prints, and she has a very fantastic quick action moving type of superhero-ish type video on Kickstarter, go to Kickstarter.com and type in Remote Angel. If you can't find it there, if you get lost, you get confused, Yennefer, you just can't find her, go to DJGrandpa.com and we'll provide links. I love your call sign. Thanks for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome to Hand in Hand, a card game developed by International China Concern as a way to raise awareness and to promote sponsorship of children living with disabilities in China.
Ben, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name correctly. Your last name.
My last name is Choa. I'm a communication specialist with International China Concern.
Okay.
In my spare time, I'm also a game designer. I'm sort of like an amateur game designer. I don't have anything published yet, so
right.
I find it difficult to actually call myself one, but hopefully this will be the first.
Oh, so you created this game?
I created this game, and we have a graphic designer that I work with, and when I told him about my idea for this, he got really excited, and he did all the artwork for it, so it was all sort of done in-house, and we just sort of thought, you know, like, hey, this would be a really creative way for us to promote what we do and the important work that we do at the charity here. So,
well, before it gets too late, I don't want to be rude. I want to say welcome to the show.
All right. Well, thank you.
Now, you told me a little bit about how the game, you know, you were this would-be, this amateur, this closet game creator, and you thought it'd be an interesting way, a creative way to do both, help out your organization, help bring about awareness, and launch your first game. Now that's kind of cool.
I actually had a little bit of insight, actually. Not too long ago, there's been a big trend in marketing about gamification and how people have been using games in order to try and do social good and promote sort of positive values and things like that. So I think that I just wanted to hop on that bandwagon, and I wanted to say, you know, I think I can do this. I can create a game that will promote, you know, positive values, that will create awareness around, you know, issues like abandonment of kids and disabilities and things like that. So, yeah, it seemed like a really natural fit.
We're talking about your nonprofit in Canada, but I guess what we haven't mentioned is your mission. I saw it on your Kickstarter page. It says, why fund us or why back us? Could you tell me why?
I'm located here in Canada, but we actually have offices all around the world. And it's just a group of very concerned people that are working with the Chinese government to try and end abandonment of disabled kids in China. And this all came from 20 years ago when our founder visited one of the care centers in China. And he just sort of saw just terrible sort of conditions around how these kids were treated. And it's mainly because they were born with disabilities and because of the extra cost that's around, you know, special needs kids and the extra care that they need and the lack of understanding. A lot of them were just being essentially discarded or treated as if they had no value. And for us, we believe, you know, like every child has value. You know, they're all important. They all deserve to be treated with love and with care. And so we set up some full-time care facilities in China, and that's our mission, is to go out there trying to end abandonment, try and raise awareness about these issues and care for these kids.
That's a very serious topic. Those are very heavy issues. It was hard for me to call you or to reach out to you. It was a game, but then it was, you know, very serious issues kind of wrapped around the game. I was just trying to figure out a way to talk about it responsibly, you know?
It's definitely a serious issue, but at the same time, we were looking for ways that we could connect with our sponsors. You know, we have a lot of great people that have decided that they want to sponsor some of these kids, and we wanted to give them a way to talk about the game that didn't have to be that heavy. You know, this is like a fun way to, you know, to play with kids and to sort of teach them about disabilities, teach them about equality, you know, teach them about the value of each individual. So the game is actually quite light. You know, we used really brightly colored images, and, you know, the illustrations are all very cutesy and kind of friendly. And, you know, each of the characters has, you know, like a fun story behind them. Well, you know, they have a like a history behind them. And we thought that, you know, hey, this is a good way to sort of introduce this while still, you know, giving somebody something light to interact with.
I see. You pretty much answered my questions, because I just didn't want to seem heavy-handed or irresponsible. But I was like, how do I ask him, is this game really fun if we're talking about children who are disabled, or, you know, matching a children with a home, you know, making the correct choice? But you've alluded to that it teaches values, virtues, and respect for other people who may be less fortunate. So you played right into my hand with that one.
That was talented how you managed to get me to do that.
And it was punny.
You planned it.
Now, how has the Kickstarter community responded to your campaign since you've launched it?
You know, we've had a lot of great support. A lot of people reaching out to us saying, hey, we love what you're doing. We love this idea. The reason why I'm talking to you today is because one of our backers actually contacted me and said, hey, you got to get in touch with DJ Grandpa.
Yes.
The community's been great. They've been very supportive. You know, we're trending towards hitting our goal right now, so fingers crossed.
How did you get it past Kickstarter? Because they're always, we're about business. So how did you get a nonprofit past their censors?
That was a big question for us, is are we actually going to be able to get this project approved? And, you know, I read all through Kickstarter's policies and guidelines and things before we even started with this project.
Right.
And I think the spirit behind all their guidelines is that you can't solicit donations. So it's like, if people back us this project, it's not tax receivable because you're actually receiving a product, and it's actually the project that you're backing. So it's actually the game that you're backing. So the money is sort of separated between stuff that's going towards actually directly helping the kids and this game that we're trying to produce.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cards right now on your website on Kickstarter. And yeah, they are very whimsical, kid-friendly, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They look like a lot of fun, so I can understand that. And if you had maybe a video, like I call it the video remix, if you would, don't spend any money. I'm not asking you to spend any money. I'm just saying, use your iPhone or iPad and film or whatever, some children playing the game. And then post it on Facebook and send it out to your backers and all that. I've seen people, when they do the video remix and give people more content, I see them raise between $400 to $2,100 within 48 to 72 hours.
That's a really good idea. I think we're going to do that.
I've seen it work for a lot of, I mean, the bigger your celebrity, the more, you know, like I've seen people do $8,000, but they were celebrities. You see what
I'm saying? Right, right.
But just for normal people, I've seen them go up like from $400 to $2,100 in like a weekend.
We don't have any celebrities that we can work with, but we do have a lot of kids that we've play tested this with before. So I'm sure we can go back to them and see if we can film them playing with it. So,
all right, Ben Choa of International China Concern. For anyone out there who's interested, that's who I'm talking to. The name of the game is called Hand in Hand. Go to Kickstarter.com, type in Hand, it'll come up. It'll bring up a very colorful page, a very whimsical page. It has some nice cards on it. And if for any reason you cannot find it there, you cannot read the small print, you get lost for any reason, go to DJGrandpa.com and we'll provide links. And Ben Choa, thank you very much for coming on the show and being the designer of Hand in Hand.
Thanks so much, DJ Grandpa. That's awesome.
I'm Bob Eggleton, and I want to talk to you about an important film currently in production entitled Art of the Fantastic, A Journey into Creation. This is a documentary film focusing on the history, influences, and progression of contemporary imaginative realism, also known as fantasy art or art of the fantastic, as both pop culture and serious art form.
I don't know how to pronounce your full name properly.
I go by Bill Niemeyer.
I don't want to be rude. Sometimes I am, but I just want to say welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for having me and noticing my work. It's appreciated.
Now, I wanted to ask you, Art of the Fantastic looks incredible, incredible marketing. You know, it's a beautifully done trailer.
Yeah, actually, that's not the trailer. It's just basically a pitch film that I, or piece, a commercial, if you will, that I put together for specifically Kickstarter to raise funds for the film.
Right.
The film is actually going to have more of a mainstream look to it and a linear story.
Oh, okay.
You saw some of the footage towards the end there with the interviews with Boris Vallejo and Donato Nicola and Julie Bell and so forth. And there's actually two films that I'm shooting at the same time. The Art of the Fantastic, which covers imaginative realism or fantasy art. And the film will explain what is fantasy art, what is Art of the Fantastic or imaginative realism, what is the roots, right, the history behind that, where did it originate from?
I just like the name Wolkenbacher.
He's a German artist. He's fantastic. He studied with Donato Giancola for about 3 months, and their styles are, of course, subsequently very similar.
When you say linear, it will be shot in a linear type of way. Do you mean throughout history as the art form has progressed?
That's exactly correct. And my agenda is to bring to the masses an appreciation for this genre of art, which I've always loved. And a lot of people who don't know what fantasy art is think it's something that, you know, should be on a t-shirt or a tattoo, or it's totally discounted as not real art.
Right.
And that's really not the case. It's been around us all of our lives. You know, what we see on the screen, for example, thousands and thousands of book covers, especially with, you know, Frank Frazetta coming on the scene and doing the Conan covers that we all remember, the Edgar Rice Burroughs covers, you know, John Carter of Mars, and then Boris Vallejo, of course, doing so many different types of covers.
I can't believe that this type of art form is not taken seriously. What do you believe the problem is?
People don't correlate. And what I'm trying to make a connection with is going back to the masters, such as Leonardo da Vinci, Caravaggio, William Bigelow, one of my favorites, and of course, Michelangelo. And they did fantastical images. You know, they were given large commissions to create fantastical images, which is basically, if you look at it, fantasy art.
Several of my fellow artists, both nationally and internationally, are coming together to promote a Kickstarter project to help raise funds for the production of the film, and will include original works created specifically for the event as contributor incentives. Contributing artists include Donato Giancola, Patrick Jones, Wolkenbacher, and myself. With your support, you have the opportunity to be part of a film that will hopefully make a difference in elevating the status and acceptance of the works as a serious art form.
There's a lack of understanding or appreciation for the art, not because they don't look at it, but they just, you know, hear the term fantasy art, which falls under the category of illustrator art, and it's instantly discounted without even being looked at. And so my intention with the film is to show the artists at work, if you will, to show some of the top artists in the field today, the best work in the field today, and bring it to the audience.
Okay, we're talking about the film. Could you give me some of the heavy hitters that are going to be in this film?
I'm very privileged to have people like Boris Vallejo in the film, Julie Bell, Donato Giancola, Bob Engleton, Ken Kelly will be in the film, Greg Hildebrandt, Michael Whalen, Patrick Jones, Wolkenbacher, Dave Seeley, Julie Bell's very talented sons, David and Anthony Palumbo.
Right.
And I hope I didn't leave anybody out, but I know there's a few others that will be in the film.
Bill, I wish you the best on Kickstarter, you and your film company, and your film, Art of the Fantastic, A Journey into Creation. It's a beautiful film. Everyone should check it out if you get a chance. Thanks for coming on the show.
Jay Grandpa, it's been a pleasure.
On this week's segment of Meet the Crowd, I'm joined by Charles Luzar. He's the director of the website Crowdfund Insider, a news portal that brings readers all the latest news from the crowdfunding community. How's your crowdfunding expert space?
Phenomenal.
I started getting more people that said, you know, you're making crowdfunding look too easy. You're making people think they can just make $1 million overnight. And I think you need to give a little more clarification or a little more heft to your show. And I was like, okay, you consider me just a cheerleader. So I will call up people with a little more heft. And so I reach out to someone, as you know, like yourself, to do the heavy lifting, as, you know, some people would put it.
I'm ready to lift.
Okay. All right, so you've never been on a podcast before.
I haven't.
Wow.
I told my business associate at lunch today, I have to make sure that I don't say anything that I'm going to regret.
I'm not going to put you in that sort of situation.
I appreciate that. I might put myself there. That's what I'm worried about. But I'm sure we'll be fine. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I had an interview last week, and it was for a film, and the director was like, you know, there were two people on. He was like, spoiler alert, cut that out, cut that out.
Nice.
You know, in synopsis, what does Crowdfund Insider, what do you guys do?
We launched in September of last year, and right. We do two things, kind of. We started with news. You know, that's core to our mission. What we want to do is provide information to bring people that might not be totally familiar with the crowdfunding space up to speed on the crowdfunding space. And, you know, we cover rewards-based crowdfunding offerings, the hot ones of the day. But we also cover what's going on in politics. We go to Washington, D.C. We try and keep on top of what's happening in the equity space and the lending space.
Right.
So whether you're, you know, just a backer, somebody that's interested in Kickstarter and Indiegogo and the rewards-based sites, or, you know, if you're an industry stakeholder that needs to know kind of the latest of what's happening in politics, we try to cover the entire space and do it all justice.
Okay.
And kind of in tandem with our news offering, we have a directory of crowdfunding sites that we started building a few months back. And we are expanding upon that now to be kind of a searchable directory of different things in the space. And I'll leave it at that for now, because we're getting ready to launch a beta. I'll just tell people this. Check back with us. We're going to be releasing a beta of a new product soon, and we're very excited about it.
Now I'm going to start using you guys' language. How exciting is it to be in this space?
Honestly, the reason that we got into it in the first place is really Kickstarter, Indiegogo. We saw them picking up about a year ago. And I'm not a finance guy. I'm a programmer by trade. So
right.
I had somebody kind of tell me, hey, this crowdfunding thing is getting big. Why don't you start watching it? And as I'm looking at this, it really spoke to me, because it really is hard to access capital to start a business or to bring an idea to life. And you know, with that being said, you look at sites like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and this stuff happens every day. Every day, entrepreneurial people are getting to fulfill a dream and bring great products to market and bring great creative projects to life. And I think it's fascinating. It's growing like crazy. And there's a lot of people out there that think that this is really going to be kind of as big as the internet.
Right.
I did an interview with Howard Leonard in California. He said that this was as big as the freeing of the slaves, I think was his quote. You know, that sounds like complete hyperbole, but you know right. what? Maybe, you know, it's hard to say now. Maybe in 5 or 10 years, we're looking at this like this really changed the world. And I hope that's the case.
Well, DJ Grandpa's Crib has only been in existence for, well, since February. So, you know, it's still a baby and all of that. But every week, I mean, I just started this. It was a dream. I woke up and I wanted to help people. But it's like every week someone's talking about revolution. Someone's talking about redistribution of wealth. And it's like all these dirty words, you know. I didn't know what I was doing. I just jumped in, and people are just so excited and talking about democracy and this is fair and this is more fair. And make a long story short, I was just never really into the whole gatekeeper type of society and pay to play and all of that. It never seemed to work for me. And so I'm just so enthused by seeing all these people succeed. And I know the success rate is only 40% across the board, you know, but it's just amazing to see the enthusiasm and the hard work that these people put in.
Well, let me throw this at you. So you're an entrepreneur and you turn to crowdfunding to try and raise some capital for your business, and you raise $100,000 and you spend that $100,000 and you fail.
Right.
It's part of the entrepreneurial process. I don't think anybody is saying that crowdfunding is going to stop failure. But in that failure, what is that entrepreneur doing? They're spending that money and they're spending it with other companies and other people to help them bring their project to life. And you know, that money is economically stimulative too. So I think there's even a gain to be had in failure in the space. And I think that's what's so profound about it, is even the companies that don't make it, we're still taking that money, and the investors are aware of the risk, the backers are aware of the risk. We're taking that money and we're putting it into other companies and other people and other entrepreneurs. So it's not just about the first level of entrepreneur in the space. It's about everybody that's helping them. And I think that's really a profound thing for the economy, not only in the U.S., but around the world.
I think that you have a front row seat to be able to watch it all unfold and to learn from it.
Well, and the beautiful thing is, we all do. None of this is happening behind closed doors. I give a lot of credit to the industry stakeholders. They have been so transparent. They're working together. They're trying to build a strong, robust industry, like not just a bunch of siloed platforms that are in competition, but they're working together to build a healthy industry. And I think that's key. And they know that. The industry's all on the same page. I give them a lot of credit.
All I can add to that is I consider you to be part of the crowd. And I'm not used to talking to the crowd. I mainly talk to the community, or at least I believe I do. So I guess what I'm trying to say is they want transparency. They love to tout the whole crowdfunding and Kickstarter or whatever platform you're on is being so democratic. So what you're talking about as far as the transparency, man, that's only going to help everybody out. And that's another thing that's just so incredible about it. I mean, the first time I perused Kickstarter, and in this segment, I'm not trying to promote Kickstarter over any other site. It's just the one that I'm used to right now.
Sure.
But the rest of the show, you know, it's Kickstarter all the time. but in this one segment, you know, we can do a little neutrality. You know, it's like Swiss or something, like if they still go.
Sure. Sweden.
Yeah, if that doesn't make them angry or anything. But anyway, it was just like the place for me. You know, I flipped through pages. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe the products. I couldn't believe the ideas. I couldn't believe people actually raising money. I couldn't believe they seemed to have like a control over their own destiny or just clicking on the videos and listening to their stories. I was like, I got to be part of this. I just want to help people out, you know, and I'm a greedy dude. You know, I'm greedy. So it's like a change of pace, you know, for me, and all of our services are free. So, you know, I gotta juxtaposition that with the greed statement. So anyway, on balance, I just want to say that it's really cool, man. And I love your enthusiasm, love the whole feel, your perspective, all of that. And look forward to meeting you, you know, in one of those events one day or something like that. We could shake hands or something like that. That'd be cool.
Absolutely. I try to go to as many as I can. So hopefully I run into you at one of them soon.
But DJ Grandpa's kind of reclusive. He doesn't really get out, but I'm trying to make an effort.
Oh, man. Come on, man. It's, you know, it's the democratization of a lot of things that's happening in the space. You need to democratize your own personal availability, make yourself available to the public.
That's cool, man. DJ Grandpa is very warm and fuzzy. So
you'll fit right in.
Right. Okay, Charles. Thank you for coming on Meet the Crowd, for, you know, coming on the Crib. I know it's not neutral ground at times, and you work for everybody, but the Meet the Crowd is as neutral as I can make it on the show. So I'm glad that you've given us a chance and everybody. He may not call himself a crowdfunding expert, but you know, he covers the biggest stories out there in crowdfunding. So who else could you call one if not him? So I got to look up to this guy, man. I'm probably taller than him, but I got to look up to him. I have no other choice.
Thanks for having me. Everybody, feel free to stop by crowdfundinsider.com. Check us out. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook. We've got over 3,000 articles to date in you know, 9 short months, and we produce more every day. So come check us out and keep on top of things.
Thanks for coming on the show, dude.
Thank you very much.
When you don't trust in who you are, feels like a hollow, empty sky. No sun or moon or star, no answer to your why. I've looked into my eyes in darkest days of time and didn't recognize anything sublime.
My name is Derek Lassiter. I am a singer and composer. Music outside was a process of talking with friends, strangers, finding out.
Welcome to DJ Grandpa's Crib, and I also wanted to say congratulations with your success on Kickstarter.
Thank you very much. Feels good.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about your music? What sort of style do you consider yourself?
There are definitely influences of soul and jazz and folk in my music. And
right.
As I said in the video for Kickstarter, the last couple of years I've hang around with a lot of musicians and a lot of artists, and
right.
We're all at that stage where, you know, you either make the decision to, you know, stick with your art, I guess, or, you know, get a job, get a house, get a family, whatever.
Well, I know a lot of artists, and what you're talking about, I believe I understand. I mean, there are a few paths that musicians, people who are artists, generally take in life. You know, when they're at a crossroads, they either get married, get a family, they either delve deep into the ministry, you know, become more religious, go to church, or sometimes they just join the military. They try and put some type of structure into their lives. And from watching your Kickstarter, I got the impression that you tried just about everything you could to walk away from the music, but you couldn't.
Yeah, I guess that's a good analogy. I definitely tried to do the 9-to-5 thing. I never tried to have a family or or go to the military or anything. But yeah, you know, there were a lot of things, life-changing events that happened during that period of time. And I did. I sort of put the music aside. And actually, there was a point where I thought I could do both. So I tried that. It didn't work. And I thought, okay, music is going to be the thing to go away. And tried that for a little while, and it didn't work for me. So went back to the music.
Even when light from the sun fades away, keep me warm.
The producer of the show, she says that your voice reminds her the feel of it. It sounds like Elton John, but, you know, not with the big flourish at the end.
Wow. That one I haven't heard yet. That's a compliment. I think Elton John is a wonderful vocalist and musician.
Since you're kind of slippery, hard to get a grasp on, hard to get a bead on, hard to hit, I'm going to have to use your own words against you.
Okay.
You had a phrase on your Kickstarter that you said, "Don't let the music die inside of you." I'm paraphrasing, but...
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
What a shame. What a sad thing to go through life doing everything that you think you're supposed to do, and then get to the end of life and realize that it wasn't as fulfilling as everyone told you it was going to be. And then you look back at that story that you wanted to write and tell, or that movie that you wanted to make, or that song that you wanted to sing. I think it would be sadder to get to that point, you know, that point in life where you regret not having even tried.
Right.
Rather than when you get there saying, well, I tried and it didn't work, but at least I tried, you know. So,
is that what brought you back to music?
What brought me back to music was so elemental. I can't even describe, you know, put into words in terms of...
You know that's your whole job, to describe that feeling, that emotion inside, don't you?
I'm trying. I'm doing my best.
On your Kickstarter, there was a song, beautiful song, playing in the background. I don't know what the name of it is, but it said that the voice inside my head, it was so unkind.
The song is Hey Angel, and that was the turning point for me. I was doing my 9-to-5 job. I was pretty isolated where I lived, and I had a lot of time just to sort of sit and think. And up until that point, I had, you know, pursued music, and I was also in theater. And the voices, you know, were in my head, were saying, you know, well, you failed, you weren't good enough, you weren't, you know, just all of those things that we tell ourselves, you know, when you're not on the stage in the spotlight, you know, you're home, you're alone, you're, you know, eating ramen noodles or something, and it's just not very glamorous at all. And so that the voice in my head was saying that one thing, but in my spirit, you know, that quiet voice that after all that's done is like, yeah, remember that melody that you liked, that, you know, you woke up singing, you know, or remember hearing or seeing someone else do their music, do their art or whatever, how that made you feel. So that's that kind of, hey, angel, I'm listening now.
I sat in that room out by the ocean, listening to my mind, that voice inside my head was so unkind, telling me I'd been abandoned and my heart was lost this time. There was nothing I could do to turn the tide.
I just want to tell you, man, if your album is anything like the song that I heard on Kickstarter, you're incredible, dude.
Oh, thank you. Wow. Thank you.
I mean, listen to the lyrics you wrote, you know? I mean, it took some thought. I mean, those lyrics aren't just, hey, baby, baby, whatever, you know, traditional R&B or traditional pop lyrics. You're a lyricist. You put some thought into what you wrote. There's some, what do you call it, introspection or something like that. I don't know the word right now, but
that's a good word, introspection.
Yeah, but I can hear that from the way the song was structured. So I mean, if your album's anything like that song right there, I know you can't take all your confidence from another person, especially a stranger like me, DJ Grandpa. But I'm telling you, dude, you're incredible, and maybe the world doesn't know it yet, or maybe the world will never know it, or maybe it's right around the corner. But if it were up to me, they would.
Well, thank you so much. That's, wow, incredible. I didn't expect to hear such words of praise.
I know, you thought I'd probably say, dude, what, some type of loser? What is, I wouldn't do that to you.
You know, truthfully, I am at a point where, you know, I'm pretty confident in what I do. And, you know, I don't question a lot of what I write about and what I do.
Right.
The only questions that come to me are, you know, is there an audience for it? And I know there's an audience for it, but getting it to that audience or, you know, it's funny, like you were saying, I think about this all the time. I don't write lyrics that are, you know, baby, baby. And
right.
I try to just write about the truth about what I'm feeling or what I'm seeing, and that's where the lyrics come from. But you know, you don't always, when you don't hear a lot of that out in the world, you wonder, is there room in the world for yours? So
I am glad that you have taken another shot and have come back to the music, and that you've crowdfunded on Kickstarter, and hopefully they've given you some support, and maybe I said a few words to you that weren't so harsh that
not at all. No, it was a very positive experience, and I got a lot of support from the Kickstarter people.
Thanks for coming on the Crib, man. I wish you the best with your music career.
I'm away. Morning after
Hi, I'm Jeff. Thanks for visiting my Kickstarter page. I'm making 30 caliber bolt action pens. These are custom made pens with various styles, sizes.
Would you like to be called Jeff or Jeffrey?
Either way works.
I'll call you Jeff. And you have the 30 caliber bolt action pens, custom made in three sizes.
Three sizes and three colors.
One of my daughters, they really liked those pens, man. They were like, wow.
That's kind of been a general consensus I've had with a lot of people when they see it. It's kind of one of those things that they've not seen it elsewhere, and it's something new to them, and they like them.
Why haven't we seen these pens elsewhere? I mean, are they, like, custom designed by you, or what?
Well, the metal is a kit that can be acquired out there, but it's one of those things that somebody would only ever get it if they did woodworking to make it themselves, and no one's actually ever made them and marketed them that I've seen. I wanted to make a Kickstarter project and was trying to think of something small that I could make doing a hobby of woodworking, but something small that I could ship as a Kickstarter reward. And that's when I came up with these.
And your pens, I don't know, they're just very unique looking.
Well, what I really like about them too is how it's got the mixture of the wood and the mixture of the metal, and it's just kind of the combination really sets them apart, especially when you kind of, you pick a wood that you like or the style grain, but it just really brings it out.
Right.
So it customizes it so much more. The pen itself is, as you see it there on the page, there's the three different sizes, the mini, the original, and the magnum.
Right.
The ink, it comes with just a standard ink cartridge, but it takes all standard Parker refills. for the original and the Magnum. And then the Mini just takes a Mini refill.
You got the marketing down because you put that 30 caliber bolt action. So, you know, it's almost kind of like James Bond, kind of like sci-fi, kind of like, you know, kind of violent, maybe like a gun or something like that. So, you know, you did the whole marketing thing. So you did a great job with that. That's kind of cool, actually. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's exciting, actually. I don't know if you can describe a pen as exciting, though, but yeah, it's like that.
Well, it's kind of hard to describe a pen as exciting. That's kind of why in the video, I try to make it just a video of the pictures moving around and kind of get some music and to kind of gain some excitement about the pen, but also it really gets you looking at the pen, like seeing it as a bullet and just seeing it so unique. And I think that in itself is what causes the excitement.
And you're right about the video. The video is very cool. The pens are moving, you know, plenty of action. And you got the nice salsa. I don't know if it's salsa or rumba, but you got the nice moving music and all of that. And the pens are flying past here and there. So that's way cool, man.
I appreciate it. I spend a little while on doing that. I use some different software, like a claymation type software to make the video.
Oh, you did it yourself?
Everything in that video, I did myself. I had zero assistance. It was a culmination of myself and my wife helping me out with the part where you're seeing myself in the video. My wife was holding the camera.
Right.
All of the video and pictures were done with an iPhone. Put it on the computer with the claymation software and put it all together. There's between, separate from the video of the actual pictures of the pens that create that part.
Right.
There's probably upwards of 1,000 pictures in there.
What started you down this road of making these pens in the first place, actually?
Well, I've always liked, as hobbies, working with wood and building things and making things. And I like making stuff with my hands. And I knew my dad actually had a lathe. And I hadn't used it much, and I wanted to use it more, and I just didn't have any projects to do. And so I was actually surfing on the internet when I came across this kit that I could make these pens. And
yeah.
I had also just recently come on to Kickstarter, and it just kind of clicked. And I said, you know what? This would be perfect. It would be able to satisfy both my desires of doing a hobby and working with wood. It would provide the really neat pens for others that were looking for it. Because you can't find it out there on your own. Unless you make it or know someone that makes it, you can't do it.
Right.
There's, of course, the upstart cost of buying the equipment, the lathe, and the tools to do it all, several thousand dollars just to start. So I figured the average Joe isn't going to do it. And hey, if I can help others get the pen and they'll help me to get the equipment and to do it, then it's perfect mix.
So are you hooked on Kickstarter now?
I love Kickstarter. I'm coming back. You will see me again with another project, I guarantee it.
Okay.
Before I even think about doing another Kickstarter or something else, I want to make sure I get through these orders and get everybody reward delivered because, you know, I find it important. I want to keep my promise dates and stick to what I'm saying. So
anyone out there within the reach of this podcast, go to Kickstarter.com and check out 30 caliber bolt action pens, custom made in 3 sizes. That title's a little long, but it all kind of goes together pretty well. And it's 30 with a 30, not the word 30. So that would trip me up. But it's a very nice video trailer. Very moving. Has some nice samba-ish, rumba-ish, you know, type music. It's really cool. And if you can't find it there, if you can't read the small print, if you get lost for any reason, go to DJGrandpa.com and we'll provide links. Jeff, thank you for coming on the show and good luck with the vocation.
Thank you so much, DJ Grandpa, for having me and believing in my project and showing your support. It means a lot.
So there's a guy named Mike Gale whose life dream is to make an anime-styled RPG inspired by classics like Final Fantasy, Breath of Fire, and Persona. And now he's making one called Soul Saga.
Hello, how are you, Mike? I can't fight the
world. Hey, how's it going, DJ Grandpa?
It's going okay. How are you doing there?
I'm not bad. Thank you for having me.
Love your RPG there.
Thank you. Been working on it for quite a while out of pocket, so I wanted to bring it to the world and see if anyone else loved it as much as I do and really wanted to see it get done, so that's why I came to Kickstarter.
Now, let's get down to business. Okay, we've warmed up. Mike, let's make sure I have all the information right. Mike Gale, Soul Saga, an RPG inspired by PlayStation classics. I'm really liking it, man. I'm really liking it. I watched trailer, of course, I say I watch it several times. Okay, yeah, I watch it over and over. I watched it with my daughter, and she was just like, wow, you know, really pretty. And it is beautiful, man. I'm flown by graphics because I love graphics. So
great.
I'm totally into it on that factor. It looks like the style of old a little bit, you know, and that's kind of cool. And I guess that's why you say love letter to classics or whatever.
I was trying to kind of hit a little bit of a nostalgic factor with the general style of it, but I kind of wanted to give it a fresh touch as well.
Right.
So
why don't you tell me about Soul Saga?
Soul Saga, it's a story about the world of Oterra, which went through this cataclysm, and there was this ancient, powerful, mysterious man called the Philosopher who tried to stop this cataclysm, but it didn't work out too well for him. And so then he lifted the country of Madonia, which was the last human nation, into the sky and set it up on top of these storm clouds called the Tempest Reef to protect it. And so it's been like hundreds of years of these people living up in this sky city. But now the islands are actually starting to die and fall from the sky, and they need to try to find a way to kind of recover them. So they're thinking about trying to find a way back down to the surface world where the cataclysm had occurred a couple of hundred years earlier, and finding a way to recover their islands. But to get down there, they have to go through the Tempest Reef, which is this crazy, kind of like the middle of the storm that they're sitting on top of. And there's just like lots of different types of islands there. There's lots of these crazy creatures, and they have to travel through that until they eventually reach like this supposedly, you know, they haven't been there in hundreds of years, so they don't know what the surface world looks like anymore. And that's kind of the basic concept of what the world's going through.
Right.
Very akin to the Full Metal Alchemist series. The Full Metal Alchemist series was a very large inspiration for me.
Those graphics that you have are killer, man. Whoever your artist or artists are. I mean, the graphics, I'm totally flown on those. I really like the game. Now, the voiceover actors or actress, it almost sounds like I'm listening to a Barbie or a Disney movie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I really like her.
I'm not saying I don't like her. She has a great voice. I'm just saying I've my children listen to Barbie movies and... Okay, let me put it this way. I wanted to hate the Barbie movies before I even saw the Barbie movies. Because I was like, it's Barbie. And I was like, it's overhyped Barbie, you know, around forever. But then I saw the movies, I don't know about the most recent ones, but how they began the series. And they are incredible movies.
Hey, everybody. My name's Mythos, and I'm going to be the strongest guild master in the world.
And I'm Elise, the cutest, and pretty soon, the best mechanic in Madonia. Mythos and I have been friends.
And I mean, and that's totally, I mean, that's totally sellable, you know? I mean, her voice is incredible, man, and the dude's voice is great, too.
They both had some kind of big roles in the anime world. Kira's mostly, she's up and coming. I really think she's going to start to get a lot bigger once there's some more roles for her. But Todd, who did the Mythos's voice, actually is already kind of like the star character in a couple of the big animes like Fairy Tail, and he's starred in Full Metal Alchemist as well. So
I was about to ask you about the theme song that was in the video. I was like, it sounds an Asian language. You know, I thought it was like the coolest pop song in the world. I mean, even though I didn't understand a word, so I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. I know a little bit of Japanese, but most of it kind of goes over my head when they start singing because they sing so fast, you know.
Why'd you do that, though? I mean, I know your love of Japanese anime and all that, but why did you go in that direction?
Because I think it felt a little more legit when I did it that way. Just that I really like the tales of series where they open up with like a nice, catchy pop song. It just feels like it's anime.
Okay, well, here's a question. I mean, it's probably predictable, though. But how risky is it for you to do this project? Because you said you had your day job or whatever. Did you put it all on the line to develop this series?
I did. I actually already quit my day job to start working on this. I've actually been out of work for a couple of years now. I went back to school and started living off of scholarships and student loans to finish up my business degree. because I wanted to finish that up. And during that time, I had slowly been ordering artwork and building a connection of different artists in the style that I wanted within the budget that I could afford. And I built up this repertoire of kind of, I wouldn't really call them team members because they aren't like full-time on the team or anything, but they're contractors that I can work with. And I also started basically mastering the Unity game engine so that I could make this project possible. And so I take on the full programmer role on it. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge risk. With the amount of money that we could make from the Kickstarter, that risk is pretty much diminished. Like with the budget in hand and the contacts that I already have, I've done a lot of planning for it. It might sound like what I'm saying is grandiose in my story, but it will be kind of delivered over the course of a couple episodes. And this Kickstarter is for the first episode.
Now, you quit your job to follow your dream, right? Do I have that right?
Yes.
Well, before you quit your job, did you know exactly what you wanted? Like, kind of like the core of your being type of thing? Like, you knew exactly what you wanted and you felt as though you knew how to go about getting it.
That's kind of what I felt. When I left Michigan and I came out here, I didn't even have a job lined up. I came out here with a couple months worth of rent in my pocket, and I was like, I'm going to make this happen somehow.
Is that around 2009?
Maybe 2010, okay. 2009, something like that. And I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to make this happen. I came out here, got really lucky getting landing a contract with Microsoft. And from there, I feel like I learned quite a bit working for them, but I learned a whole lot more in my free time because after I worked, I would come home and I would study a lot more about project management, about what goes into the artwork, about how to do animations, how to do the 3D modeling, how to do all the programming. So I basically became just this very well-rounded producer or project manager. And so then once I had acquired all those skills, I was just like, all right, I'm going to give this a shot because I feel like there's no better time. My knowledge is not going to be, any more ready for it in the future in the position I'm at Microsoft.
What is that Murdoch thing from the A-Team? I love it when a plan comes together. It's kind of like that. You know, you seem like one of those stories. And so that's what I wanted to say to you, man. I love it when a plan comes together. Anyone out there who's interested in Japanese anime, who loves video games, who loves games, period, this game is pretty hot on Kickstarter, man. I think you should check it out. It's called Soul Saga, and the characters have very beautiful voices, very stylized voices, classic voices. And the comment section is kind of blowing up on his page here. So go to Kickstarter.com, type in Soul Saga. That's SOULSAGA. If you know Japanese, it might help you with the theme song, but I can't help you with the lyrics. You'll have to comment on the page. If you can't find it there, go to DJGrandpa.com and we'll provide links. Mike, thanks for coming on the show and good luck with Disaster Cake.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's been fun talking with you.
Now on the show, we don't do fashion that often. We don't do fashion enough. But I have such a gentleman. His name is Josela. He's out of Spain. And they have what I would call the most fashionable bicycle helmets I've ever seen. I couldn't even tell they were bicycle helmets, actually. I kind of would like to get one myself, actually, because they look pretty sporty. And I'm not just trying to sell you something. If you watch the video on Kickstarter, you'll see for yourself. Because trust is a very big factor. Okay, Josela.
Yeah.
I'd like to welcome you to the show, man. And I'd like for you to tell me about these fashionable bicycle helmets.
About 2 years and a half ago, there were some friends talking after lunch, and they were wondering why the couples didn't wear a helmet with the bike in the city.
Right.
Here, Valencia is a really complicated traffic city, and bikes go all over the places, and it's kind of dangerous. But they found main problems, difficulties, the two main questions why people don't wear helmet in the city.
Okay.
The first one was, where do you put your helmet after you use the bike? And the second one was, why wearing a sport helmet if you seek a trendy look? So with this issue, they start like thinking about what can they do to respond to those questions. So the first one was like make a foldable helmet so you can put it in your backpack. Right. And the second one was make a different cover that you can exchange them. So they become a part of your, like a clothing complement for you.
Yeah, accessories.
The problem was also that you have to mix those two facts, like foldable and trendy, with the safety standards. So it took 2 years to find a way to mix those three things. And finally, it starts Kloska.
I gotcha. One other question. Now, in the United States, as far as I understand it, wearing bicycle helmets is the law. Is it the law in Spain?
Right now, there's not a law that you have to wear a helmet when you ride a bike. There's no law about it. Right now, they are discussing now because they want to implement that, the use of the helmets inside the cities.
So you passed all safety standards.
Yeah.
How does your streamlined safety helmet stand up against the bulky helmets? How have they rated?
Actually, these helmets, they are made in three parts.
Right.
So in order to make the heat less stronger for you, the strength of the heat is absorbed for the three different parts, not just one. So actually, this helps safety.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because you have this collapsible system,
yeah,
it takes more of the brunt of the accident.
So the heat is absorbed for the three different parts, not just one.
You launched your fashionable helmets in Spain first. And I think of Spain as a very fashionable place. How did the public respond to your helmets?
People here like a lot the helmets. Because as you say, here in Spain, there's a lot of designers and we have a really design culture. And that's a benefit the users are finding in this kind of helmets. So that's what I said before. That right now, the helmet is like a clothing complement right now for you also. It's not just a safety stuff, a safety thing. It's like almost it's all.
It's like an accessory,
a clothing complement.
I got you. When you get the helmet, does it come with just one color cloth or do you get like different colors that you can swap out per day?
When you buy a helmet, it goes with one cover, but then you can buy different ones. And also what we want to do is like people can make their own covers. We give you the patents so can make their own at home. And if they don't know how to sew, how to make it, we put them in contact with people that make this kind of thing. But the helmet goes with one cover.
What about care and maintenance? You bring me to that question now, because we're talking about fabric, and usually bike helmets aren't fabric. You know, they're just plastic or something. So what about general maintenance and washing and you know, care and stuff like that?
The helmets, they don't need any special care or something. You just when the cover is dirty, you just go into the washing machine. And
okay.
It's like wash a pair of gloves, for example.
Josele, I wish you and your company, Kloska, the best. And for anyone who's interested in a fashionable bike helmet, you don't hear people say that often, a fashionable bike helmet. Go to Kickstarter.com and type in Kloska. That's Kloska. And if you can't find it there, go to djgrandpa.com and we'll provide links. Josele, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you.
Betcha I can predict the future. Up next, Stephen Sauce.
All writers are oracles. Very few writers have the strength to look at that constant need for the new, for the better, and to make something out of that. The stories presented here are all head-on explorations of fate, its attractions, its consequences, and everything in between.
There How's it going, Stephen?
Good evening, or afternoon, or...
When you're talking about fate, it's all the same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, that video's a little creepy, man.
It is a little creepy. That's one of the things that Nayad, the editor, was kind of surprised by. She originally was envisioning something a little bit more upbeat, a little bit more happy. And what she got back was actually a little bit creepier. And it's good. It's not that the stories are bad.
No, it's not bad.
Yeah, I met Alistair at Gen Con last year.
Now, who's Alistair?
Alistair Stewart is the host of Pseudopod, and he occasionally hosts Skatepod as well, their podcast.
Right.
Actually, the last time I heard them report anything, I think Pseudopod, if you count downloads, is the same as a magazine subscription. Pseudopod is the largest horror periodical market on the planet at the moment.
Wow.
If I remember correctly, I could be wrong.
I believe you.
So I've used him for two introductions for anthologies because he has such a love for the work.
Right.
And I love his voice. He's from the Isle of Man.
The future's not set. There's no fate but what we make for ourselves. But it is still very tempting to skim a few pages ahead, and that's what the authors assembled here have done.
You know, my job as a publisher is to entice people to say, hey, this is something that I think is awesome and interesting.
Right.
Why don't you check it out? And it's been an interesting transition, making that jump from being an author myself to then becoming a publisher.
I know. Yeah. What's that like?
As a publisher, I choose editors that I can trust to make things fit my overall almost framework. But at the same time, all three of these editors, there's a common thread of these are things that I would like, you know, things that I want to read, and they're good. You know, it's strange because I almost don't have any control, but I do.
Of course you have control. You're the publisher.
A large part of what I do and a large part of what makes me distinct from some other publishers is the focus on different types of minorities, whether it be minorities in orientation or minorities in gender or minorities in ethnicity,
right,
or a faith or whatever. So I have to be really sensitive to those things. And I don't think that's a burden. That's something that I relish doing. And that's something that I've had other people react very positively to. And I'm glad for it.
You try to lead your life as socially and ethically as you can.
Well, yes. I am a straight white guy, you know.
Right.
And
okay, what does that mean? No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
Yeah. Well, no. But then
no, I'm just joking. No.
But the thing where John Scalzi recently said, you know, that's like playing on easy.
Okay.
You know it is playing the game on easy. You know, yeah, I have difficulties. Everybody's got problems, and that doesn't make my problems any less or more, or my sadness or my pain any less or more. That does mean that if I were to come up against the same obstacles as, say, you know, a female writer or a writer of color or as somebody who's bisexual or whatever, you know, pick your thing, there's going to be more difficulties that they face, all other things being equal. And that's crap.
Let's say I take everything that you said and I co-sign it, or I just say, okay, I believe every word you just said.
Okay.
And I pose this question to you. Is it wrong if you are, you know, the white guy in the room, you know,
mm-hmm,
and let's say you got everything going for you. Let's not say that you don't have problems and all of that. Everybody does. Let's throw in all of
sure,
that.
Sure.
Is it wrong for you to protect what you have by saying that, you know, I'm the white guy in the room and I'm going to stay on top because there's just only room for X amount of white guys on top. And if I give that space or that voice or that platform or that portal to someone of color, that's one less Caucasian dude running things.
I look at it this way, man. I know somebody last year, Origins Game Fair is a convention. It's a pretty large one and it's in Columbus. And last year I went and I got a hotel room and I didn't have to pay to get in because I was an author and I was a guest and everything else. And I paid for the hotel room, but still. And I met this person who lives in Columbus, who lives in that town and literally volunteered for like 3 out of 5 of the days of the convention. That was all she did just so that she could go and afford the entrance fee for this convention in her hometown.
Right.
Sure, I got problems and I got debt and I got all this other stuff. But realistically, I got it easy. And I got to recognize that. I'm not going to sit here and say like, oh, here, I'm going to go sit in a lean-to and give all my money away. I don't think that's a very effective way for me to help people. At the same time, I can look at this and go, it's not going to hurt me to help others.
Right.
I've got more than I need to survive. So why not use that excess to help others? Why not, you know, share space with that? And there's not the scarcity that some people think there is.
Does that just make you a bleeding heart, a bleeding liberal? I mean, you know, I mean, and is that a dirty word? I don't know.
I don't think I'm a bleeding heart liberal in that, again, I'm pretty pragmatic about it.
I think so much of what you said kind of leads us to what type of person you are that would lead you to publish a book like Fate,
Yes. You
know, and what it imposes, Tales of
Deviation.
Oh, I was about to say deviation. I was like, why deviation?
Deviation. No, that's something different. I know people who do that too, but that's a totally different story.
Yeah, that involves the cop. So, let's not go there.
Specifically talking about that sort of thing. I mean, you want to know what comes next, right?
You tell me, what's the future?
See, that's the thing. We don't know. That's what's so tantalizing about it. You know, look at Cassandra. You know, the whole character of Cassandra is built around, and she knows the future, and nobody believes her. That's her whole thing.
Okay.
And we as an audience sit there and we watch this character tell the future and warn everyone, and they ignore it.
Okay, with Cassandra in mind, would you like to know the future if you could?
Sort of. I'm going to have to cheat. There's some things I'd like to know. I'd like to know, are things with my girlfriend going to work out?
Right.
Is this Kickstarter going to fund? You know, how are things going to look for me as far as my day job in a year? Theoretically, that would give me a chance to plan ahead.
Right.
That makes me think of Ecclesiastes. It makes me think of Louis C.K.
Okay.
And it makes me think of Fight Club.
Well, what about this part in your video? You said something to the effect as, if you could look through the window at the livest party, would you join in? Or would you just sit there and stare? I'm paraphrasing, but, you know.
Yeah, I know.
That's what it felt like.
You know, not that long ago, I would have just sat there and watched. Not that long ago, I would have sat back and I would have tried to keep myself apart from everything. And I think that would have been wrong. And I think at this point in my life, having had some of the things happen to me in my personal life, some of the people I've met, by having to just jump in, that really the only choice that we have as real people in our very real limited way is to just jump in and to live things as fully as we can. And having seen some of the stories in this anthology, I think they kind of echo that, that even when we get a chance to look forward, that even when we get a chance to predict the future, that it only matters when you still jump in, when you say, well, I know this, but I'm going to do this anyway. This is giving me a chance to do things anyway.
You know, with what you just said, with your rendition, with your soliloquy, if I can call it that, from watching Star Trek and James T. Kirk so many times, if I can call it that, you've had no other choice but to be a publisher.
I don't think so.
You know, I'm glad that on this show every week people tell me that I'm wrong. I'm really happy about it. But go ahead.
You know, I wrote a couple of guest blog posts for people. Right. And there are two things in my childhood. I'm freaking old now. You know, one was seeing Bram Stoker's Dracula. I went to a later showing of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, that's
and
some
I met
scary
him.
Stuff, man.
And so I ended up meeting somebody there who I ended up marrying, and that ended up throwing my life into a completely different track. The other one I haven't written about, and that was where I met a gentleman who, just by coincidence, he mentioned Cthulhu, and this is before Cthulhu was everywhere. And it was at a Catholic youth convention, of all things, in West by God, smile when you say it, Virginia. And because I had met him, I ended up going to college at a different place, which is why I ended up meeting this woman and so on. That said, since then, there haven't been that many choices that There have been choices that have pointed me in a particular direction. Maybe I'd be in a different location. Maybe I would know slightly different people. But the thing of writing has always been in my blood. And the thing of publishing, of trying to help these things that I care about come to fruition, has always been there as well. So those aspects, I think, are aspects of my personality that were going to emerge regardless. And because of where we are in this particular point in place and time and with our society where it is, that's come out the way it has. That I can be a full-fledged publisher rather than an editor or working for a publisher, that I can actually do this all in a respectable and reputable way. It would have been expressed in some way, regardless.
I still think you just proved everything I said right, but I accept what you say, and I just want to say for anyone who's interested in What Fates Impose, go to Kickstarter.com, type in what I just said, and if you can't find it there, if you need help to find Steven, go to DJGrandpa.com and we'll provide links. I still say you're going to fund, dude. I want to say thank you for coming on the show. I believe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate your time.
I'd like to thank all our guests this week. I'd also like to thank our listeners. We couldn't do it without you guys. A special thanks goes out to Trevor Williams and to my mentor, The Mumbler, for providing music for DJ Grandpa's Crib. Thanks to Theron Kennedy, our director of marketing, and to Jeffrey Banks, our assistant editor. Until next week, so say we all.
The homepage for DJ Grandpa's Crib is djgrandpa.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, DJ Grandpa's Crib, all one word. Please subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, which helps other people discover the show. And don't forget to leave a comment while you're there. Our producer is Von Rupert. The executive producer of this and all Bedrock Communications podcasts is AF Rufus.